Are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning, or right. Good afternoon over there.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Yeah,
good afternoon.
We're thrilled to have
you. Yeah, Rachel, I'm here, yeah.
Thank you. Let's just, straight off the bat, let's talk about what happened. We're going to hit two areas today, if you don't mind. One is with Gaza opening up into Egypt will be our first call. And the second, I want to talk about the Lost Tribes and how it fits in with America being a representative government. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
Okay. What was the news when, or what was the feeling of the news about Egypt opening up that border?
So you could say there's a great deal of trepidation. We're very apprehensive because Hamas rules in Gaza. Hamas is a Nazi-type organization. Hamas believes in the destruction of the Jewish people. They quote all of the negative sources that are present in Islamic tradition against the Jews, and they believe the Jews are literally, almost literally, the sons of the devil who have to be destroyed, and this is also found in their constitution, in their founding charter. And they control Gaza. And that, in effect, Hamas, the movement of Hamas, it's a religious movement, it's an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. And it appears that the Muslim Brotherhood is now also in control of Egypt. It's half apparent. It's almost openly coming out and saying it. At the very least, a high proportion of the present rulership of Egypt after the overthrow of President Mubarak is now pertains to the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood more or less controls Egypt, and the Muslim Brotherhood is apparently cooperating with the Hamas, who are themselves an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, and they by opening the border to uncontrolled entering and entering and leaving and bringing in goods and weaponry and so on, they are opening the way for a lot of potential trouble. They can even now in Gaza, they have an enormous number of rockets that they receive from Iran and advanced weaponry, and some of these rockets can reach the Tel Aviv area. They can reach all of the major centers of the Israeli population centers, and we don't really know how we're going to deal with it or what will happen. God willing, our leaders will receive direction from the Almighty, they will receive inspiration, and we will overcome. But nevertheless, as long as the danger is there, one can never be certain. One can never be certain of oneself, and it leaves a lot of room for worry.
Yair, my thought is this. They don't hide what they want to do to Israel. They're very open about wanting to destroy Israel. And that is something I don't understand. When people think that this is going to be the more area that's given to the Palestinians, as Obama had offered in his speech a couple weeks ago, the peace cannot happen with people that are not peaceful.
Yes, I agree with you. President Obama has presented these revolutions in Egypt and also in Libya, and the arousal amongst the Arabs as an Arab Spring as a will of the people to overthrow the tyrannous and autocratic governments. But this is not necessarily so. All the indications are that we are replacing one devil for something which is may even be worse from it, because the common person in many Arab areas is been strongly indoctrinated over generations by the Muslim preachers and so on, as to adopt a Taliban type attitude, to be extremely Islamic in the worst sense of the word. This was not necessarily the way Islam should be. There are Islamic sources, and there are also Muslims who are moderate, who are almost Western in their approach, but we are not going to preach to another religion how they should conduct themselves. That is up to their own conscience, up to their own It's not our place to tell them how they should interpret their religion. But if they interpret their religion in such a way that they believe that they have to kill us, then we have grounds for concern. We have to protect ourselves from this.
Well, I think...
And this is the truth. This is there in black and white. It's not something that you have to, like some type of a conspiracy theory that you have to dig deep underneath the surface, and you have to find all kinds of hints and so on, which may or may not be pertinent. This is something that, as you said, they're coming right out and saying it. They're declaring it. They've written it up in black and white, and they are preaching it. They are announcing it on their radio and on their television sets and in their writings, and on the internet, in their Facebook announcements and so on, and it's there. And you have to go out of your way to hide yourself from it, to pretend it is other than it is, and that seems to be what a good portion of the Western media, and also, I don't like to say it, but apparently the American administration under President Obama is doing now. They are hiding themselves and pretending that these evil people, that these people have their wicked intentions, to have this aggressive, assertive, violent push that they are openly announcing, that they are something. They are in effect something else. It is all pretense, that they're actually very moderate and very nice people, which is not the case.
No, and like you and I are saying, and Cynthia, they are openly saying what they want to do with the destruction of Israel, and I am with you that certainly not all Muslims are radical, but the ones that are not so much into the religious aspect of Islam. They are following what I would consider a governmental stronghold cloaked in religion. It really doesn't have anything to do with what you do privately in your religious sector, because certainly the moderates aren't even interested in wanting to kill anybody, but the ones that are out front are saying, we want to destroy Israel, and that is my concern.
Yeah, so it is indeed. It is grounds for concern.
Yeah,
and concern is justified.
What about... And I think you made a valid point. I've heard it said the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. And that's, I think, what's happened with Mubarak being ousted. We've got somebody in there that we do actually know could possibly be, not possibly, they are anti-Israel. And I think we've got big problems. Cynthia, do you have something?
Well, Yara, of course, history is my big interest. And I am wondering, from what I am reading, does this go back to the scriptures? Are we seeing maybe Ishmael, Esau, all these groups coming together, and maybe eventually join together in order to go against the other brother, Israel? And I've just been studying, and I don't know, and I was hoping maybe you could guide me and the audience and give us a little history on this.
Okay, so we know that Ishmael was the son of Abraham, and Ishmael was a wild person. He was described as a wild donkey of a person. In the Bible itself, that was what was prophesied as to what he would be, how he would develop, and that his hand would be against everyone and everyone's hand against his. And this is what has happened wherever Islam has established itself. They have imposed the characteristics of Ishmael over all the inheritance, of all the adherents of their religion. So in a sense, in a symbolic way, you could say that Ishmael represents the Muslim religion in general. But there's another thing in Gaza. Gaza was in effect historically was a Philistine city. That was where Samson was killed in Gaza. He was killed. That was where he brought down the temple on all the Philistines who were celebrating his having put his eyes out. They were making fun of him, and so he wrapped his hands around the main pillar and brought down the whole building, and killed more people in his death than he did in his life. And this was in Gaza. And so Gaza is in effect a Philistine city, and the Philistines are also represented today not by the Palestinians. The very word Palestine, comes from a Latin rendition of the name Philistia, of the name Philistine. Palestine means Philistine, so the Palestinians, so-called Palestinians, actually call themselves after the Philistines. And so they have these two aspects, the aspects of Ishmael and also the aspects of the Philistines. And we have to be aware of this, and it helps to be aware of this, to read the Bible with this message, these identifications in mind, and take note of them, because the Bible itself tells us not only what happened in the past, it also tells us what is liable to happen in the future, and how things can develop. And we also have we have different prophecies concerning the Philistines. We have in Isaiah chapter 11, it says that Judah and Ephraim together will fly against the Philistines. And if you read the Hebrew actually says "Va'afu v'ketet plishtim." It could be understood to say that the Judah and Ephraim together will cause the Philistines to be flown out to the west. I have an article of this on my website, britam.org, explaining this and explaining the passage in question. But that's a subject for another talk, for another forum. But these indications still exist in the Bible, that in Gaza we have both the attributes of both of Ishmael and of the Philistines, and they've both come together, as it says in Psalm 89, in the end times all of these nations will come together, and they are combined, as if to say they've combined their powers and their potentialities to try and wipe out the Jewish existence in the land of Israel.
Thank you so much, because I know if we don't understand history, we're doomed to relive it. So I really think it's important for our listeners to know these historical facts. Can we go a little bit ahead of that and ask the questions? The Lost Tribes, which you have done a fabulous work. In fact, I have in my hands your book, The Tribes. And it's like a supplement to my Bible, so I can understand the historical facts that are in Scripture, because you do such a wonderful job of documenting that. It might be twofold. Did the Lost Tribes come to the West? You have them in the European countries, and eventually come over to America. So what was set up there is that these Philistines, these Ishmael, would start moving. Once they joined together in a brotherhood, start moving towards the other, the Lord God seed line.
Look, we are indeed, we are entering the end times, and in the end times, Judah and Joseph, or the ten tribes, will join together once more. The ten tribes were a part of the whole section of Israel, the whole 12 tribes, and then they split apart, as you know. They set up their own separate kingdom, and the ten tribes are taken into exile by the Assyrians, and they lost their identity. And we have identified them through the biblical and rabbinical and archaeological evidence and Assyrian sources and general historical sources. We have managed to identify them with certain peoples, such as the Cimmerians, the Scythians, and other peoples who were in the Middle East and then moved to the north, and from the north moved to the west. And then we have shown how they came to settle in Western Europe. They gave rise to dominant elements, significant elements amongst West European nations, and from these areas came the early foundational elements of the USA, of Canada, of Australia, New Zealand, and the related nations. And we identify the USA, the inhabitants of the USA, as having been influenced especially by the tribes of Joseph. The tribe of Joseph was Ephraim and Manasseh. Two tribes, Joseph was split into two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh. It could be that demographically, according numerically, the USA, amongst the Israelite inhabitants of the USA, the tribe of Ephraim is the greatest in numbers, but qualitatively, as far as national characteristics are concerned, our impression is that Manasseh was the one who placed his imprint on the inhabitants of the USA, on the Israelite attributes of the USA came from Manasseh, whereas Ephraim was moored in Britain and offshoots of Britain, such as Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and so on. We identified the USA with Manasseh for several reasons. One reason is that we have been enabled to show that when the 10 tribes came to the West, when they settled in Western nations, they still remained, something of the original tribal cohesion remained. And not only that, they still retained here, and they retained, to some degree at least, the original tribal clan names, the original names that they had in the land of Israel for the different clans within the tribes. And it's very often these very same names, exactly the same or very similar, or sounding the same, or having the very same meaning, we find them in these areas of Western Europe, and we can relate where different tribal groups were dominant, which areas belong to which tribes. And we found Manasseh in the British Isles, especially in the British Isles, but also in parts of Germany and parts of Holland and so on, but especially in the British Isles, especially in the north and the west. And from these regions came a good portion, a very high percentage of the early settlers of the USA. We also found that the biblical commentators explained to us also the simple meaning of the Hebrew tells us that when Joseph brought his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to his father, Jacob. Jacob was also known as Israel. Israel was the father of the 12 tribes. And Israel was also the father of Joseph. Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. When Jacob was about to depart, he asked Joseph to bring his sons to him. So Joseph brought Ephraim and Manasseh to him. And he placed Manasseh to the right hand of Jacob and Ephraim to the left hand. And we see that he crossed over his hands. And by analyzing the Hebrew expressions used, and also by seeing what the different rabbinical commentators and so on said on this matter, and also not only that, but also according to the simple Hebrew of the text, it seems that Manasseh would become great after Ephraim. First Ephraim would be great, and then Manasseh would become great after him. And historically we had the British Empire. The British Empire was the greatest empire the world has ever known in extent, in its power, and in the benefits that it brought to humanity. And the USA just more or less overlapped the British Empire. The British faded away, as if to say, not they didn't fade away, they're still around, but the British lessened, their power diminished, and their predominance diminished, but they just faded in the background whilst the USA took their place.
Yar, hold that thought. We're going to take a news break. Please, this is so interesting and so needed for our listeners to hear. Yair Davidi in Israel talking to us, explaining to us the history of the Bible, which is coming to life as we sit in studio. Listen up. Go to his website. Support his website. Understand that the likes of Yair are not common. A scholar amongst scholars. And we're telling you, there is no other way of understanding the tribes without going to his site. And I speak because I know. Now, we're going to have a question before we bring Yair back on the phone. So, Cynthia, go ahead with our $25 cash giveaway every week. 25 buckaroos if you answer this question.
Yair is talking about the tribes that came through the British Isles, and then over into America. It was one of the sons of Joseph that Jacob blessed, and it starts with an M and represents representative government. So if you have that answer, and he'll probably tell you again when we start, give us a call, and you win $25.
Okay, so go ahead. Let's bring back Yair to explain where that Manasseh ended up.
So the early, as we said, the early inhabitants, or the early settlers, the very first pioneers, and many of the early, a very high percentage actually, of the early immigrants to the USA, to North America, came from those areas in Britain where we have shown that elements or tribes, tribal clans from Manasseh were predominant. And we also find that the very name Menashe in Hebrew, one of its meanings can mean representation, as if to say the quality of a responsible representation was to have some influence on the characteristics of his descendants. We find in Genesis 41:51, it says, "And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, He hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house." So it's been pointed out by Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch that the word "has made me forget" actually means has made for me a representative in place of all my toil and on behalf of my father's house. In other words, representation or responsible representation is what the word Menashe means. And we have this, I'll explain where the idea comes from. In Hebrew, you have word roots. You have different word roots that give rise to different names. And people know Hebrew. They can understand what a word means, even if they've never heard it before, because of the word root is similar to other words that they know. So we have the word Nashia, which can mean forgetfulness. It also means move. When you forget something, you don't actually forget it. It slips your mind. It's still there, but it's just moved in from the mental retrieval system is not able to place it. And so, too, when Jacob fought with the angel touched him on the thigh, and he moved the sciatic nerve, he moved the sinew, and therefore Jacob had to limp the next day. And ever since then, the religious Israelites do not eat this sinew on the hindquarters. It's known as a gidan onoshe in Hebrew, meaning the sinew that moved out of its place but still remained attached. In other words, it was dislocated, as if to say, it was put out of its place. And so also when you forget something, as you have to use the same root, something's put out of its place. And also have women. Women in the plural are called noshim. You have ish, isha, man, woman. Ish, isha, mm-hmm. Ish is man, isha is woman. Because isha was taken from man when God created Eve. He took the woman from the man, so we have ish, isha. And in the plural, usually you would say ishot. You'd expect it to be ishot, but in effect, not for the plural for woman, it's noshim. Why is it noshim? Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch explains to us that it's related to the same word as a creditor. Someone to whom you owe money is a noshe. Why? Because he has put something in your possession, money or equipment, I don't know what, but he still retains a claim on it. He still retains a claim on you through it. He's still attached to it. So to women, in the aggregate, in the plural, an individual woman is the equal of a husband. But usually in public affairs, women prepare to delegate the responsibility to their men. But they don't just delegate the responsibility, they expect men to be responsible to them. In other words, it's like a creditor. The women are responsible to the women. So we have this very word Menashe, which means responsible representation. And this was what gave rise to the USA. We know that the USA once belonged to Britain. The British founded the US, the early colonies from which the USA developed. And they brought the settlers over and they governed it. And then they wanted to receive taxation from it, but they, at the same time as they wanted taxes from the early inhabitants of the USA, they were not prepared to allow the inhabitants to have representation in the British Parliament. So they rebelled. There was American Revolution, and one of the slogans of the revolution was "No taxation without representation." In other words, the idea of responsible representation is what gave rise to the USA, and ever since then, the Constitution. And the idea of popular representation and of responsibility of the delegates to the people who elect them, and the responsibility of the electors for how those who are elected by them, those who represent them, for how they behave, that is a very strong point in the USA, in the characteristics of the USA. And this is exemplified, this is encompassed, as if to say, by the very name Menashe in the Bible. But the very name that was given to Menashe, and we find that Menashe came to dominate people who gave rise to the USA. We also saw how the USA, Menashe was to come out of Ephraim, was to develop later than Ephraim. And the USA did the USA did develop after the British, because we also have a proof that the British themselves, from their prime, and America, the USA developed out of it. The very name America, American popular parlance. America, the name America, the term America represents the USA. When you say American, you mean someone from the USA. You don't necessarily mean someone from Canada or from Mexico. You mean someone from the USA. America is the simple word. America means someone from the USA. And the word America, where did it come from? It came from the word Machia. Machia is the firstborn son of Manasseh. And Machia gave a rise to this word in the Hebrew language. And the Middle Ages, there was a famous Jew in southern France, known as Machir, that was his name. He was also very important amongst the Gentile population. He was the kings of France gave him power over the area, and he is recorded in Gentile records as well as in Jewish ones. And the Gentiles called him Americo, or America.
Wow.
That was his name, because Ha Machir, which was his name in Hebrew, it's very difficult for people who are used to Latinized and Western systems of expression. We can't really write it down, can't really transliterate it, so they changed the name to Americo. And from this name America, which became popular in the area, we had Amerigo Vespucci, who was an Italian navigator shortly after the time of Columbus, and he proved, after Columbus discovered America, Amerigo Vespucci sailed around the American continent and proved that it was not attached to Asia, and then the maps were drawn up based on his reports, and in his honor, or through him, the name America was given to the American continent, and later America, the name America became is now attributed to someone from the USA. So you could say that just going by names, but divine providence so wanted it that America would be named after the firstborn son of Manasseh. We have the presidential system, we find it in the Bible, as we have shown, the presidential system which is particular to Manasseh. It's a bit different from the kingly system. This too was an attribute of a characteristic of Manasseh. And there are a lot of other points from different areas of study, different points of view, but all of them point in the same direction, that the USA, in the USA today, a large percentage or a significant number of the inhabitants are descended from Israelite tribes. And amongst those tribes, the tribe of Manasseh has managed to give its national characteristics to the whole of the country, to the whole country.
Now, if our listeners are not reeling from that information, then they're asleep. Because this is today's news coming from the biblical perspective. When you have someone that is telling you that the root words, and anyone that knows Hebrew, and I have studied for years, understand that those root words explain, it's a story within the story. What Yair is telling us is that we are a part, that many people are a part. The lost tribe certainly went somewhere. They didn't vanish in thin air. When you go to his website, you will not find any more deeper research than what he offers. And I am encouraging people to go to his website,
www.britam.org. And there are a list of a number of books. What I call the textbook is called The Tribes. It is an amazing book.
It is, and what I am hearing here, and what I, of course, know, is this is not just about history in the past. It is about what's going to happen in the future. The Bible spells it out, but you better have your Scrabble board out to read it and somebody that can interpret it. Yair, how would you think that America is standing right now in regards to supporting Israel?
Well, it's difficult to say, because on the one hand, the USA is a good friend of Israel. It always has been. It's been for a long time. It's the only, in some ways, it's the only friend, or not the only friend. It's the strongest friend we have, the most persistent friend we have. And also, this has become part of the American tradition, of the U.S. tradition, of the U.S. character. You can say that the USA believes in the state of Israel, helps the state of Israel. It helps us economically, it protects us, it helps us in the international arena. And so we have to be grateful and we have to recognize all the good and the good friendship and the fraternity, the brotherhood that the USA has displayed towards Israel. At the same time, we have to be realistic, not realistic, but we have to face up to certain facts that under the present administration, they are pressuring Israel not to settle in the West Bank, not to build where when we need to build. And they are trying to unsettle us, to unnerve us, to loosen our grip upon this holy land of Israel, amongst the most sacred regions of the area, with the very birthplace in Hebron and Jerusalem, on Judah and Samaria, where the Israel nation came to being, and where we have all the stories of the Bible took place. That is where they're trying to loosen our hold upon these regions, and we need to strengthen our hold, we need to increase our population. President Obama should not take the same position as Pharaoh, who wanted to limit the number of Israelites being born and have the firstborn children thrown into the Nile River because there were too many of them and did not know what to do with them. He has to face up to it. The will of the Almighty, the will of God, is that the Jewish people remain in the land of Israel, that they strengthen their hold upon it, that they increase and multiply, and that they populate the region. And this is what must be done, this is what should be done, and it is a mistake on the part of America not to fully back Israel. I say this because I think it's also for the good of America. The better the USA is towards the state of Israel, the stronger it supports the state of Israel, the more the USA will be blessed, the more virtue, the more merit God will attribute to them, will give to them, more credit they will have, the better it will be for them, and God forbid the opposite. But I say this together with the recognition, with the full acknowledgement that the USA has done much more than anyone else has on our behalf.
And the fact is, and I've said this before, Israel is the size of a postage stamp. There's 25 other Arab nations, and I don't know where the Palestinians or where that they could go, but there's many other places to go. The point is, there is no other place that is a homeland, whether biblically, and that's what we stand on, is the Bible. Hashem says that is for them, that land, but it's so small, I don't know where anybody else would want the Jews to go. Where would they want them to be dispersed to? There is nowhere else.
That's true. We have to stay here. We can't go anywhere else.
There is nowhere.
There's nowhere. We were in other places, and they didn't want us.
Right.
They still don't want us. And even if they did, after what happened, we're back in our homeland. We only left our homeland because we were expelled from it by force. And a person does not willingly leave his natural place of his nationhood. He does not leave his own home. He does not let others evict him. And this is all we have, and we are surrounded by antagonistic, primitive, very bad people, despite what other good qualities they may or may not have. On the whole, they have aligned themselves with the negative forces, and they are against us, and they want to destroy us. And this has to be faced up to, and we need all the help that we can get, and we need to be strengthened and not weakened. We need to be encouraged to settle in the West Bank, to be encouraged to build there, to develop the area, to do what we can to become a great nation in this region. Because only through becoming great ourselves, only becoming by improving the qualities that we do have, will we have any chance of survival here. So we should be encouraged to do that, and this is for the good not only of ourselves, but it's good for the USA. It's for the good of Western civilization. It's for the good of all of humanity, and this is what the God of the Bible wants to take place. He wants this to be done. He wants the state of Israel to be supported.
Well, we certainly have had a home run again with you on the other end of this phone. We want to thank you so much and encourage our listeners to go into your website. And I mean this sincerely. We learn from you. Every time you speak, we learn.
And on that website, you will find so many subjects. So you have only just had the tip of the iceberg. You will learn incredible amounts of information if you're willing to sit down and take the time to learn. And therefore, if you do, you're going to understand what's going on today and why the hostility is directed to us as well as Israel.
And thank you so much. We certainly enjoyed the time. I hope you'll come back with us again.
Thank you, Yen.
I'll be very happy to. Thank you for listening to me and having me. Thank you for participating with us.
Well, we appreciate you.
Having me participate with you.
Well, we appreciate you and your work, and we will be in touch. And thank you again.
Shalom.
Thank you very much.
Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom.
Well, what an interesting person this scholar is, scholar of scholars.
I went on a search some years ago and went on the internet, and I wanted to know what happened to the 10 tribes. And Yair's name came up, and my goodness, my eyes were open as I had never had them open. And there might be people that disagree and say that he can't follow it, but he has taken all the ancient names and pulled them together and dissected this. It's the most incredible work I've been, you know, privileged to have the opportunity to study. And just, I mean, I've got the book in front of us. And not all the tribes, you know, there was a mixture that traveled with them. But Reuben probably ended up in France, and Asher were the Scots. Netherlands was Zebulun. These are all the 12 tribes and where they went. It's truly fascinating.
And let me say this also. If you do not know the Hebrew language, I don't know what to tell you here. I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but here goes my shofar.
Toot-toot.
Yeah, because let me tell you something. What he said is accurate. The word, the underlying root word of the Hebraic language carries something. Now, I've gone up against pastors that don't know a salami from a shalom. I'm not saying that they cannot be smart and certainly have their own ideology, but the root words in the Hebrew language mean a lot. When he was saying Isha and Ish, if you actually look at even those words for man and woman, if you remove the tetra, if you remove a couple one letter off of the woman and one letter off of the man, from the Isha to the Ish, you have the two letters of the name of Hashem in there. When you remove that from husband and wife, you have a godless relationship, and the root word is fire. So each letter of the Hebraic language carries not only the gematria, not only the numerology part of it, but it also carries a deeper meaning. If you don't know that, you can't possibly understand the root and the full context of the word. So what we're saying is Yar is Hebrew fluent. And if you don't find somebody that's Hebrew fluent, you're lost. And that's all I need to say about that.
And it's interesting. I think a lot of people get offended by this and say, well, you expect me to go and learn Hebrew. My friends, I don't know Hebrew, but I have enough knowledge that I can go and I can find the people on the internet all over to answer questions. And the reason why we're lacking in this knowledge is because we're not even asking the questions. And in order to know a little bit of